Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Hey, this is great.
Freedom, yes, freedom, not cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
Hey, 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 welcome back, everybody. 4:02 in the Pacific time zone here at Rolla J Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. So glad to have you here. So glad to see Bacon Dan in the chat. Bacon Dan, we're going to have to do an audible here. I've got my 40-minute presentation, so that's got to start right at 20 after. So Bacon Dan, if you're listening to this, call in at, let's say, 12 after. 12 after? Can you call in early? Let me know in the chat room if you can call in early, and I'll get that song prepared. But yeah, just back from the Northwest Cannabis Classic in Tacoma, Washington. So my presentation on the main stage is going to be happening at 20 after. So stay tuned for that. And it shocked my friend, Chef Jeremy Cooper. You remember Chef Jeremy Cooper from, he always says that when he says his name, I'm Chef Jeremy Cooper. It's like, you're not cooking anything right now. Anyway, I love the guy. Jeremy Cooper's there, and you might remember him from his days with Magical Butter. He's no longer with Magical Butter, but he was like their hype guy, you know, wearing the suit and hey, so, and he has a great radio voice, right? So, he also audio bombed me, right? You know, photo bombing, right? Photo bomb when like you're trying to take someone's picture and somebody jumps in the picture and you didn't want them there or you didn't know them there, whatever. Well, audio bomb, right? I'm trying to do this interview and we'll play that later in the week too. You know, we've got the Greenstream radio that we replay here, Greenstream radio that we replay here on 420 radio, and it's from Olympia, Washington. Well, On One is one of the cats on that show. On One, Grandma Cat, and Tim Me. That's why I'm getting into like 50s jazz lingo, daddy-o. Anyway, so On One, Tim Me, and Grandma Cat. And I see Grandma Cat at different events, and I just saw Tim Me. He's got like rap stuff coming out, rap album, I think, coming out. And then On One was there, and we did the Inception interview within an interview to... And it's spooky as we're talking to each other. His background and my background are like real similar. Like, wow. You worked in IT too. Oh, okay. Oh, you were in a band too. Oh, okay. So it was a great interview, if a little narcissistic on our parts, but it was a lot of fun. We'll play that a little later. But anyway, Jeremy Cooper audio bombed that one on us and it was a lot of fun. There was great people up there in Tacoma. And a lot of friendly people, but the atmosphere is a little weird at an expo because of this new law that has passed in the state of Washington that felonizes any sort of marijuana consumption. And it's like not just, it's written so it's not just if you, like, I am going to open up a marijuana bar and people will be able to smoke marijuana there. Bam, felony. No, this is even if you have a place and you know pot smoking is going on there, or you might be reasonably aware that pot smoking is going on there. We're talking felony. Yeah, lock you up stuff. And so this has got organizers of these events now all worried because, you know, you have a bunch of marijuana vendors and a bunch of marijuana people in a legal marijuana state, and people are going to smoke marijuana somewhere. It's going to happen. And you just worry. And so there was that kind of hanging over it that was a little freaky. So we'll have highlights from the Northwest Cannabis Classic coming up throughout the rest of the show. We're going to have an early 420 break. Don't adjust your watches. You're not suffering time dilation. We'll talk to Bacon Dan at 12 after. We're going to take a commercial break here. Come right back and get ready for some music.
Jive, marry, grifo, grass, hay. Technically, it's cannabis sativa, the common name, marijuana. She has found a crutch to see her through her difficulties instead of facing up to them and coping with them. And in time, she may be ready to try something different, something better.
Gateway theory doesn't work. Maybe. It's a reality.
This is Robert Blatchorn, and you're listening to 420 Radio with Radical Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Alex Rogers, producer of the fourth Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, the OMMBC. There have been a lot of recent changes to Oregon cannabis laws. Recreational sales start October 1st, new licensing from the state, and changes to medical marijuana. Are you prepared? Join us at the downtown Portland Hilton September 12th and 13th with the industry's top cannabis experts, political leaders, exhibitors, and nightly networking events. For more information, join us online or give us a call. The OMMBC. Be part of history.
420 Radio is listener-supported 24-hour internet radio. Our mission is to provide exposure to the activists nationwide fighting for the end of marijuana prohibition. You can help sustain our mission with a one-time donation to 420 Radio at 420radio.org/donate. You can also become a monthly VIP member at 420radio.org/donate and get access to our members-only content. Your donation keeps our stream and podcast free at 420radio.org/donate.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabusiness 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
Welcome back, everyone. That's music from Django Reinhardt on the guitar and Stefan Grappelli on the violin with Viper's Dream. That's what we were called back in the day. The hiss, like a viper when you hit on a joint, or a reefer, as they would have called it, or muggles, or tea, or jive, or mez. A lot of people don't know mez, but you'll learn all about mez and the man who that term was coined for, Mez Mezro, Louis Armstrong, Gene Krupa, and all the Hepcats, and especially Cab Calloway. From the Reefer Jazz Era, we play it on the new Viper Hour every Monday night here on 420radio.org. The best of early 20th century blues, jazz, swing, big band, lounge music, all the way up to the late 50s Rat Pack. We love that. It's the establishment, I believe, of the American cannabis culture. The early 1900s, when you had the jazz musicians, and before them, even the Dixieland musicians, the New Orleans era, as the blues moved into Chicago, into St. Louis, into these more northern towns. And they brought that culture, people singing about the reefer man. Talking about smoking reefers and talking jive and the tea. Cab Calloway had an entire cast of characters he used to sing about. Jerry the Junker, Minnie the Moocher, and of course, so much more. Check it out. The new Viper Hour, great early 20th century music coming up tonight, 8 p.m. Pacific time, and on the weekends as part of our 6-hour music block. You can catch the new Viper Hour at 1 in the morning Pacific time on the weekends. All right, we've had a lot of fun up at the Northwest Cannabis Classic. And coming up after our Roots Monday Daily Toker Tunes, you're going to get to hear my presentation at the Northwest Cannabis Classic. And like I was saying in the first segment there, it was shocking to Jeremy Cooper. Because during the events, he's walking around and taking care of everything that's going on about the event and, you know, coordinating the security and the VIPs and making announcements. He's got a wireless mic that he's running around with, right? So he's not standing there watching me give my presentation and probably not hearing it all that much, except for, well, with the subject I opened up with were numerous words that caught his attention. Let's just put it that way. I'll put some suspense into this. Numerous words that caught his attention. And so it was a little shocking to him, but it won't be shocking to you, especially if you've followed me for any length of time. So let's get to it here.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, glad to have Bacon Dan calling in early, following the audible perfectly. Thanks, Bacon Dan.
Hi, I do what I can, man.
Hey, that's awesome, man. Hey, football's almost starting up. Are you excited or what?
I am. I'm really excited that my Buffalo Bills in preseason slumped the Pittsburgh Steelers, like, what, 49-19? It was gorgeous.
Good stuff there. I've seen some decent stuff out of the Packers. Watched the Seahawks-Chargers game the other day up there in Tacoma because I was forced to because it's all Seahawks up there. And otherwise, you know, good times up there. And you've been having good times down here. Summer is just coming to an end. What do you got planned for the next couple months?
Well, I'm actually happy the summer's coming to the end because, as most people know, I hate the heat and bright lights. So the, this rain and gray that we've had the past couple of days, I've been doing, you know, the Snoopy happy dance over here. But next couple of months, I mean, working hard with Karaoke from Hell. I am the official sign-up person on Mondays. So, you know, that's going good. The show's going really good with Who's the Rock. We had a really, not going to lie, a really shitty show last week. So we're going to bring it right back to tomorrow night. Huge pumpkin beer fest coming up at the Green Dragon, which I'm really, really excited for. They're actually going to let me do some video work for it. So pretty pleased about that. And, you know, Halloween's coming up and the rain's coming back. And I'm single in Portland, so you know I'm going to have fun.
It's going to be a good time. All right, so let's get to this tune. We don't have a lot of time. What do we got on tap?
All right. Well, we have one of my all-time favorite songs to sing at Karaoke from Hell, and that would be Sid Vicious's cover of My Way. Now, most people think, oh, you know, that's a Frank Sinatra song. Yes, Frank Sinatra did sing it, but it was written by Paul Anka.
Ooh, trivia here on Roots Monday. Here it is, Sid Vicious with My Way.
So I face the final curtain. You can't, I'm not the queer. I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. life that's full. Each and every highway has it, much more than this. I did it my way.
Regrets, I've had a few.
Chief Bottle Washer of 420 Radio. I am the host of the Russ Bellville Show. I'm also a writer for High Times, Alternate, Huffington Post, and numerous other websites. And today's presentation is entitled, Marijuana Isn't Really the Issue, Freedom is the Issue. And I think it's all great that in my home state of Oregon, we legalized marijuana, and marijuana has become legalized in three other states. Ohio's on the ballot for 2015, Nevada's on the ballot for 2016, California, Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts, and Michigan are expected to be on the ballot in 2016, so there's gonna be a lot of business being done, there's going to be a lot of people making money. I just want to make sure that we all understand that while that's great, this is a civil rights issue that we're talking about here. So, today's presentation is to try to give you a look and a perspective, because I get to travel all around the country, Texas, Florida, Georgia, Missouri, New York, Boston, Virginia, all sorts of places that don't have marijuana legalization yet. And then I think it's critical that we understand that what we're talking about here is a civil rights issue first and an economic issue second. And we can't lose track of the fact that marijuana prohibition is destroying the United States of America. Our people are being violent. Our rights are being decimated. Our property is being confiscated. Our children are being re-educated. Our patients are being devastated. Our country is being contaminated. Our economy is uncompensated, and our neighborhoods are eviscerated, all because of this prohibition on cannabis. So we're gonna take a look at each one of those things that I just mentioned and show you how marijuana prohibition is harming the United States of America and why it's so important that as we build these industries in these legal states, that we do it the right way. We don't shoot ourselves in the foot. We don't give our opponents an easy way to scare people in the next 8 or 9 states that are gonna try to legalize. So let's start with our people being violated. This young lady here, her name is Charnesia Corley. This story happened about a month or two ago. She's 21 years old. She gets pulled over 10:30 at night in a gas station parking lot in Harris County, Texas. Allegedly, she ran a stop sign. Now, as the cop is talking to her about running the stop sign, Deputy Bloodhound here thinks he can smell marijuana.
I smell weed.
So he orders Charnesia Corley out of her car, handcuffs her, puts her in the back of his squad car while he goes and conducts a search of her car. He finds nothing. There's no weed in the car. But when he goes back to his own police cruiser to talk to Charnesia again while she's still handcuffed, he says he still smells marijuana. I still smell weed. So Officer Bloodhound calls in a female deputy. The female deputy orders Charnesia out of the car, she's still cuffed, stands her up against the cop car and says, take down your pants for a search. Charnesia says, Officer, I'm not wearing any underwear. Officer says, that doesn't matter. Now remember, this is 10:30 p.m. in a public gas station parking lot on the dash cam of the cop. So, a female deputy arrives and says, that doesn't matter that you're not wearing underwear, bends her over the cop car, and attempts to stick her hand in her vagina to search for weed. Charnesia, the 21-year-old woman, says, no! You know, this feels a little too rapey for me. So, the deputies, another deputy's called in, they throw Charnesia on the ground with her hands still cuffed behind her back in this parking lot at 10:30 at night. One deputy holds her right ankle, one deputy holds her left ankle. They say, open your legs or we'll break them. And the female deputy searches Charnesia Corley's vagina for the weed that the cop thought he could smell. Now let's think about this for a second. How many people here have ever held a quarter pound of weed? In Texas, it takes a quarter pound to make a felony. These cops were committing a sexual assault, a rape, which in and of itself is a felony, thinking what? They were gonna find a quarter pound in there? I mean, I know everything's bigger in Texas, but come on now. That's a little ridiculous. Well, in Texas, under 2 ounces is what they call a Class B misdemeanor. And really, realistically, if she was driving with weed and hit it up there off the cuff, it couldn't have been a whole lot, right? It had to be a little bit of weed. So basically, the cops were willing to commit a rape to find someone guilty of a misdemeanor amount of weed. In fact, a Class B misdemeanor is like harassment and indecent exposure. They did that, raping her in the parking lot. Now, they did find some weed. They don't say where they found the weed. They found 0.02 ounces. That's a little over a half gram of weed. Charnesia Coley was held down in a parking lot, legs spread by 3 cops in public to find a half gram of weed. This is why it's so important we continue to legalize marijuana, because people's lives are devastated by this shit. Now, you may be thinking, Russ, that's a terrible story. But it must be a one-off kind of thing. Oh no. Earlier in 2014, a Texas state trooper pulls over Angel and Ashley Dobbs. Angel's 38, Ashley is her niece, 24. Allegedly, they were littering. Saw them throw something out their car window. So the cop claims to smell marijuana and calls in a female trooper for backup. The female trooper's name is Kelly Hellison. This is the dash cam footage, and you can see right there, Kelly Hellison reaching down Angel Dobbs' pants on the side of the freeway, in the headlights of the cop car, on the side of the road, looking for weed. Now, when Hellison, this trooper, went to search Angel and Ashley, she put on latex gloves, searched Angel's anus, searched Angel's vagina, searched Ashley's anus, searched Ashley's vagina. Did you notice that I did not say changed gloves between the two women? Nope. She wore the same glove, violating and penetrating two women. But wait, there's more. Alexandria Randall and Brandy Hamilton, two African American women coming back from the beach. Texas cops pulls them over for speeding, claims they smell marijuana. They find a small amount of marijuana in the car, so they call it a female trooper. And the female trooper puts on latex gloves, searches Alexandria's vagina and anus, searches Brandy's vagina and anus, and again did not change gloves in between the searches. In broad daylight, in full view of Alex's 8-year-old nieces and nephews that were in the car watching to find a little bit of weed. But wait, there's more. Jennifer Stelly. Now, Jennifer Stelly was actually a prison guard coming home from work. Cops pull over for speeding, say they smell weed. The boyfriend in the car says, yeah, I smoked some weed, it must be me. The cops arrest him, they search her, they find pot in her purse. So they call in a female trooper, and get this, Kelly Hellison, the same trooper who had done the search on Angel and Ashley Knox, is called in. And they search Jennifer's anus and vagina, did not find any weed. And it's not just Texas. All those cases were in Texas. New Mexico, David Eckert ran a stop sign in a Walmart parking lot. A canine dog alerts to the smell of drugs. They get a warrant, and they subject this man at the El Paso Hospital to 12 hours of procedures, which included 2 manual anal probes, 2 x-rays, 3 enemas, 1 colonoscopy, and never found any drugs. Timothy Young pulled over for a very similar situation. The same canine dog from the other example alerts. They subject him to the same manual probes and x-rays, find no drugs. An anonymous woman crossing New Mexico to El Paso. Canine dog alerts. They strip search her anal and vaginal prober, force her to defecate in front of witnesses, and they don't find any drugs. Oh, and by the way, the hospitals where this all happened billed those people for the procedures. So, it's nice that we're making money on marijuana, but let's not forget this is going on, and that what we do here in the legal states is going to influence the rest of those states as to whether they change their laws. Now, these canine alerts. Canines are something that I like to call the key to the Fourth Amendment. Right? If a cop's got a hunch, got a suspicion, can't get a warrant, doesn't have probable cause, he can always bring in a dog, and that dog will alert and give him the excuse he needs to start searching. I got 2 studies for you on canine dogs. Number 1, from Forensic Science International, they found that a canine dog in a familiar room, one that it had already been familiarized with, was only accurate 83% of the time. That means out of 5 people caught with drugs, they'd find 4 of the people with drugs. But on the other hand, 10% of the time they false alert, which means out of 10 people driving who don't have drugs on them, the dog will say one of them has drugs on them. And that's someone getting a search who's not violating any law on the word of a dog. It gets worse if they're searching around the perimeter of the car. Around the perimeter of the car, they're only accurate 2/3 of the time. They false alert 22% of the time. That means out of 5 drivers that they run a drug dog around, one of those drivers will alert when that guy has no drugs on him whatsoever. And once that dog gets inside your car, they're accurate a little over half of the time and false alert more than 1/3 of the time. Once that dog is in your car, 1 out of 3 times, if you don't have drugs, it's gonna say you do. And you're gonna be sitting on the side of the highway in handcuffs watching cops go through your stuff. I've been there, it's not fun. It's not fun at all. Another study, now this was a cool one, in the Journal of Animal Cognition, these guys took 18 teams of handlers and dogs, so 18 different canine units, right? The person and their dog, ran them through four rooms. Now, the cops thought there was drugs involved, but no rooms had any drugs in them. They were all drug-free, but some of the rooms had sausages in them. Dogs love sausages. So that was to see if the dog would alert on something it likes rather than drugs. Some of the rooms had a red piece of paper taped to the wall, and the cops were told the red piece of paper means there's drugs in the room. Now remember, there's no drugs in any room. So there's four possibilities. It could be a red piece of paper that has sausages in the room, a red piece of paper that doesn't have sausages in the room, no piece of paper but sausages in the room, and no piece of paper and no sausages in the room. And guess what? The drug dogs alerted 225 times. The dogs did not alert any more if there was a sausage or not, but they did alert more if there was a red piece of paper on the door, showing us that if a cop thinks there's drugs, he will subconsciously cue his dog to alert. That's why you're getting so many of those false positives. Now, the war on drugs and the war on marijuana, because really most of the war on drugs is about marijuana, is one of the few policy things in the United States, few policies in the United States that affects all of your Bill of Rights. People just think, oh, you know, you can get, you know, strip searched or you can get arrested, but it's even bigger than that. It's all 10 of the Bill of Rights. First Amendment, freedom of religion. Well, not if you're a Rastafarian. Freedom of speech. Well, not if you want to advertise your legal pot shop. Freedom to peaceably assemble. Well, not if you're smoking pot and we can see you. Freedom to petition the government. Unless you live in a non-initiative state, there's no petitions in non-initiative states. Second Amendment, right to bear arms. Unless you're a pot smoker, because the Gun Control Act of 1968 forbids any federally licensed firearm dealer to sell guns or ammunition to any known abuser of federal Schedule I substances. This is why a lot of people are upset about a patient registry in Washington, because once you're on that registry, you can no longer buy guns or ammo legally. Third Amendment. Now, the Third Amendment's a weird one, but it's really the basis of our right to privacy in the United States. Some abortion decisions are based on this, right? Right to privacy. But the Ninth Circuit Court ruled, that's our circuit here in the West Coast, ruled that a cop can put a GPS on your car in your driveway without a warrant, without ever telling you. So much for the right to privacy. Fourth Amendment, free from unreasonable search and seizure. Well, we showed you all the women that got probed. That seems pretty unreasonable to me. And there is this decision that came from a case where the cops got a warrant and they were going after this crack dealer. And he was up on the second floor of this apartment complex. They go to the second floor, they turn to his door. He's not there, but they can smell weed over there on the other door. Now, they don't have a warrant for the other door. They got a warrant for this door, but they smell weed over here. So they knock, police. And the guy doesn't open the door, but they can hear some rustling in the background. So they break down the door, they go in, they catch the guy with weed, they bust him. And the Supreme Court said, that's cool. If a cop smells weed and hears noise behind the door, he can break down your door without getting a warrant. Probable cause. This is the whole probable cause part of the Fourth Amendment. Well, probable cause really turns out to you were driving a car while you were black. Your hair is a little too long. I don't like your tattoos and piercings. That's what the probable cause has become. Fifth Amendment, no double jeopardy. You can't be tried twice for the same crime unless you're busted dealing weed and they throw a conspiracy charge on it. Two charges, technically two different crimes, but really for the same thing. Can't be a witness against yourself. You can't self-incriminate yourself. That's your right. Except when they take your piss and use that to incriminate you. Can't be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Except for civil asset forfeiture. If we catch you with weed, we can take your cash and stuff. and we don't even have to prove that you committed a crime. We'll talk a little bit about that in a second. Sixth Amendment, speedy public trial. Roger Christie, a religious cannabis user in Hawaii, sat in jail for 3 years waiting for his speedy public trial. To confront the witnesses, you in court, part of your right is you get to confront the people who accuse you. How do you confront a drug dog? Your Honor, he's not being cooperative. Like, how do you talk to a dog? You can't. Compulsory process for witnesses in your favor. That is, you can bring people in to testify for you, but they're not allowed to say medical marijuana in federal court. If you followed the Kettle Falls 5 case, you know this, right? Patients who are following state law for medical marijuana cannot say they were using marijuana for medical purposes, even to the point where the judge will get them contempt of court if they admit they're sick. If they say, well, I've got multiple sclerosis, and contempt of court, you're going to jail. Seventh Amendment, you get to sue people. If people do you wrong, you can sue them. Well, how do you sue your dealer or grower in an illegal state? You can't. Your grower can screw you over and there's nobody you can go to. Can't be retried. This is the no double jeopardy. Once you're innocent, they can't retry you to try to find you guilty. Except, there was a case in California where this prosecutor was going after a dispensary. She got a cop. They made a fake ID for the cop. Now, when I say fake, I mean it wasn't the cop's actual ID, but it was a real California ID. Like, no bouncer would ever know that this was a fake, because it was a real California-issued ID. Cop takes the fake ID, goes to a doctor, gets a recommendation from the doctor. Again, doctor has no idea, looks like a real ID, gives him a recommendation. Cop goes to the dispensary, buys some weed, and then the cops come in and bust the whole dispensary for federal distribution of marijuana charges. This prosecutor took that to court, and the jury found him not guilty. Because this is Morro Bay, California. They're cool with medical marijuana. They're like, no, not guilty. So that prosecutor, after he was found not guilty, went and got a new cop with a new ID, with a new recommendation, to do the same thing over again. They bust him again, take it to a different judge. He finds him guilty. So much for that not being tried again for the same crime. Now, technically, it wasn't the same crime because it was a different cop. But come on, it was the same thing, right? The jury had already said, we don't want to bust that guy for that. So they went and found a different jury. Eighth Amendment, excessive bail. They cannot charge excessive bail. I was busted in Utah. My assistant had left a vapor pen in my laptop bag. I didn't even know it was there. It wasn't even full. It had a tiny, like, residue amount of oil on it. My bail was $1,200 for that. and federal fine for one plant is $250,000. Feds find you with a seedling, they can fine you $250,000. And then no cruel and unusual punishment, except for all those medical marijuana patients who go to jail or prison who don't get to use their medical marijuana and they end up dying there. Richard Floor, Jonathan Magby, two names that come to mind immediately. Ninth Amendment. Now, a lot of people don't know the Ninth Amendment, but to me, it's my favorite amendment in the Constitution. The Ninth Amendment says, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Translate that from 18th century speak. What they're saying is, we can't write them all down. Just because we wrote down you have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of this, freedom of that, doesn't mean you don't also have freedom to take a nap, freedom to have sex with your wife, freedom to enjoy a good meal, freedom, I mean, there's a lot of rights we have that aren't written down. That doesn't mean we don't have them. In fact, in the Declaration of Independence, they talk about life, liberty. They say, man is endowed with certain inalienable rights that among these, our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Among them, here's three, but there's a whole bunch more. Well, think about the founding fathers. Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Washington, Ben Franklin, they're all growing hemp. They're paying their taxes in hemp. How could a bunch of hemp farmers think it wasn't a natural right to be able to farm hemp? Now, why didn't they write that down? Why didn't they put something in the Constitution that people shall have the right to grow hemp? Well, that would be like us saying people have the right to breathe air. Why would you think that? The founding fathers could have never imagined that someone would ban hemp growing. That would be insane to them. So they didn't write it down. And then the 10th Amendment, we all know the 10th Amendment, that's states' rights. If it's not a federal thing, it's a state thing. If the feds haven't been given the permission to do it, and the states haven't been banned from doing it, then it's legal. Well, nowhere in the Constitution does it say that the states can't regulate medical, and nowhere in the Constitution does it say that the feds do regulate medical, so what are they doing? Banning medical. And there's a bunch more. 13th Amendment, no involuntary servitude, except we got pot criminals working for 17 cents an hour in the prisons. Oops. Equal protection. Your rights should travel with you from state to state. Unless you're a medical marijuana patient, you can only go to Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, and Delaware. Those are the only states, oh, and Nevada now, the only states that recognize other states' cards. 15th Amendment, black voting rights. This was after the Civil War, and they said you can't deny voting rights based on race. Except, in the state of Florida, if you have 21 grams of marijuana on you, that is a felony. That's a little over three quarters an ounce. In the state of Florida, if you're convicted of a felony, you lose your right to vote for life. Because of this, the felonization in Florida means one out of five voting eligible black people cannot vote in Florida. One out of five black people cannot vote in Florida. And in fact, if an ounce was legal in Florida, we would have had a President Al Gore. That's how many votes we lost from the black community that would have certainly voted for Al Gore, but they couldn't because they were felons. 16th Amendment, income tax. Well, we know how they're using tax to attack the dispensaries, right? 19th Amendment, women's right to vote. Well, yeah, but you can't vote when you're in prison unless you live in Vermont or Maine. Vermont and Maine, you can vote on death row. But the other 48 states, if you're in prison, you can't vote. Women in prison has increased 646% since 1980. And 21st Amendment, repeal of prohibition, actually says intoxication in that amendment, and yet they don't want to let us use marijuana for that purpose. All right, confiscation. Our property being confiscated. There's a thing called civil asset forfeiture, which says that if cops think your property came by way of crime, they can seize it. They don't have to prove it came by way of crime. They don't even have to convict you of a crime. They take your stuff, and then you have to prove it wasn't a crime. Now, usually what they do is they take just enough that it's worth it to them, but not so much that it exceeds what it would cost you to fight, right? Most of these civil cases don't get fought because the cost of fighting them is more than what they took. And because of civil asset forfeiture, $2.5 billion has been taken from people in just 1 year alone, 2010. And 85% of those people will never charge for the crime. Our children are being re-educated because of this war on drugs. This woman's name is Shona Banda. Shona Banda is a mom in Garden City, Kansas. She's using cannabis oil to treat her Crohn's disease, a very serious intestinal disease. She's not been shy about it. She's written books, she's on YouTube, she's very public about her medical cannabis use. One day, her 11-year-old son is in a DARE class in school when the cops come out and tell lies about drugs. And so he started telling a bunch of lies about marijuana, and this little brave 11-year-old says, but my mommy uses cannabis, and it's a medicine, and it helps her survive. So the cops took the kid out of the class, subjected him to about 3 hours of interrogation without any lawyer or notification of parents, got a warrant, went to her house with Child Protective Services, took down the door, went inside, found her pounder, so of marijuana she uses to make her oil, took the kid off to Child Protective Services. He's now living with the estranged ex, the father. She is facing 34 years in prison for what they found in there because her son wouldn't would not put up with a lie about medical marijuana. And now, of course, you know that kid is going to get all sorts of talking to about how awful weed is and how bad his mom is, and she's a criminal and she's sick and she needs help. Our children are being re-educated. Our parents are being devastated. Patients are being devastated. In all the states where a patient has fought for his right to work, California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and Michigan, every Supreme Court in those five states has said, no, sorry, you have no right to work. You have no protections from the Americans with Disabilities Act. If your employer wants to fire you for failing a piss test, tough on you. And then there's this thing called the Box Canyon, which is, have you noticed how the medical marijuana laws from state to state keep getting stricter and stricter? First it was you can grow your own plants. Then the next few states said, no, you can't grow your own plants, you have to get them in a dispensary. And now we got states like Minnesota and New York that say, no, you can't even have a plant. You can come to the dispensary and get oils, edibles, and tinctures, but no herb. No, no, no. And then we got those 13 states in the South mostly, in Wisconsin and Iowa and Utah, that passed CBD only. You can't even get THC now. Medical marijuana laws keep getting stricter and stricter because they have to keep that line separate between the stoners who deserve a cage and the patients who deserve sympathy. So they keep making that much, much more narrow. There was a law passed by Congress that said DOJ, Department of Justice, you can no longer spend money to bust state legal medical marijuana. Department of Justice and DEA have ignored that law. They're still busting people. To the point where the congressman who wrote the law had to say, what the hell's going on here? I didn't want this to happen. I wrote a law here. And then you've probably heard about this terrible overdose and epidemic we got with OxyContin and fentanyl and Percocet, Gardasil, all these heavy-duty liver-killing opioids that are highly addictive. Well, we know that marijuana works better on chronic neuropathic pain than anything. And we know that people that use medical marijuana that also have to use pills can use about two-thirds to one-half the pills. So why are we letting people poison their livers, force them to poison their livers, when we've got a non-toxic herbal alternative? Our country is being contaminated. You know, climate change is a big deal, right? Climate change is getting hot, the weather, it's awful, climate change, but we've got a thing called hempcrete, a building material made out of hemp and lime that is carbon negative. It takes more carbon out of the atmosphere from the plants growing and from the building calcifying than it takes to make the hempcrete. It's carbon negative. We've got hemp seed oil and biodiesel. That would be helpful to our environment. We've got petroleum-free hemp plastics that we're denying. And cotton. I'm wearing cotton today. Except my hat. My hat is hemp. I'm truly a pothead. Anyway. Cotton t-shirt, cotton jeans, requires 5,283 gallons of water to make what I'm wearing right now. 5,283 gallons of water to make what I'm wearing right now. And hemp, of course, requires far less than that, and they'd last a lot longer. Our economy is uncompensated. All of this marijuana commerce that's going on in America, none of it gets taxed. No jobs get created that really contribute to the economy. Washington and Colorado have already made $200 million in tax revenue and cleared over $1 billion in product sales. That was already happening. It's just now been moved over to the legal side. They've created 2,000 new businesses and over 10,000 jobs. And for the people out there who say, oh, well, it's only an ounce. They only legalized an ounce. For only legalizing an ounce, Washington and Colorado have dropped the charges for all marijuana crimes, not just an ounce, over an ounce and home cultivation, by 63% in Washington and 80% in Colorado. 80% in Colorado because they have home grow, Washington doesn't have home grow. In other words, because we legalized just one measly ounce, two out of three people in Washington who would have been busted didn't get busted. And four out of five people in Colorado who would have been busted didn't get busted. And this has real effects. When cops are chasing potheads, they're not chasing criminals. Violent crimes, what these numbers here are what are called the clearance rate. That is, a clearance happens when there's a crime and we make an arrest. So when it comes to murder, we only make an arrest 62% of the time. 37.5% of the murders in America never lead to an arrest. And look how bad it gets for robbery. 28% of the robberies are solved. 11 or 12% of the car thefts. Maybe if cops weren't spending so much time pulling plants and busting potheads, they could catch some murderers and some rapists. 40% of rapes lead to an arrest. Only 40? 3 out of 5 people raped never see anyone get charged for it? We had about a half a million, we had about a half a million violent crimes last year, about 46% of all crime. There were 658,000 arrests for mere possession of marijuana in the last year. And the feds, by the way, have a program to pay local cops to make drug arrests. They don't pay them to make rape arrests. They don't pay them to make murder arrests. But they pay them to go after potheads. And that has led to the fact that in America, we have over 100,000 rape kits, evidence kits that cops use when there's a rape charge, that have been sitting on the shelf that have never been tested. And the reason why is the labs have a limited amount of time. Okay, and so I have to prioritize what they're going to test. Cases that are going to trial jump to the front of the line. Well, when you catch someone with weed, you're going to go to trial. You've got the criminal. There he is. Let's take him to court. But a rape, you might not know who did the rape. There might not be a rape charge yet. So that one sits and waits while we test all the little baggies of green leafy substances to prove they're weed so we can take them to court and bust them. Now, we know that our opponents are full of crap. They like to say it's about public health. Well, if it's about public health, they'd ban tobacco. They'd like to say it's about public safety, but if that were true, they'd ban alcohol. They'd like to say it's about the children, but if it was about the children, they'd ban Happy Meals and they would ban Fruit Loops, right? So don't believe the hype. It's always been about demonizing a certain set of people in a culture. It's always been about racism, classism, and other sorts of discrimination. Now, that's not going to end when we legalize. America's a racist country. We got a lot of work to do, but this isn't helping. So let me give you an idea how this got started. I'm going to show you some actual quotes from the 1930s when they were first starting to ban marijuana and what the newspapers and news magazines were saying about marijuana. Here's one. Marijuana is highly intoxicating and constitutes an ever-recurring problem where there are Mexicans or Spanish Americans of the lower classes. That's not Fox News. That's the New York Times, 1933. In some districts inhabited by Latin Americans, Filipinos, Spaniards, and Negroes, half the violent crimes are attributed to the marijuana crime, or marijuana craze. 80% of the murders committed by Mexicans are done while they're drunk by marijuana. Marijuana influences Negroes to look at white people in the eye, step on white men's shadows, and look at a white woman twice. I wish I could show you what a small marijuana cigarette does to one of our degenerate Spanish-speaking residents. That's why our problem is so great. The greatest percentage of our population is composed of Spanish-speaking persons, most of who are low mentally because of social and racial conditions. Oops, went too fast. The primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races. Marijuana is taken by musicians, and I'm not talking about good musicians, but I'm talking about the jazz type of musicians. There are 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the U.S., and most are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana use. This marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and any others. I always like doing this slide because my cousin Kenny is African American and he's a drummer. And every time I do this slide, he goes, "Thanks, marijuana." Now, that's all stuff from the 1930s. Obviously, we have President Obama now. We're way past this racism, right? No. little thought experiment for you. Now, we see a lot of stats about marijuana and how much black people get busted for it more than white people. The ACLU says it's 3.73 times more likely that a black person gets arrested for pot than a white person. Stats are nice, but I like faces. I like reality. I like to see what is the practical effect of these policies. So what I did is I went to a website called whosarrested.com. Have you ever seen these mugshot sites? The county sheriff puts up the mugshots, you can look through the mugshots, right? So I went to one of those websites, right? And I went to look at Milwaukee County, Wisconsin for January and February 2012. Milwaukee, Midwest city, not big LA, not small, fairly good racial balance. In fact, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, it's about a quarter black, and it's about 20% Hispanic, it's about 54% white. So it's a nice ethnic balance there going on. So I gathered up all the mugshots I could find, and I divided them up by face as to who is black, who is Hispanic, and who is white. Now, not a scientific thing, like I'm guessing, right? Guy could be Dominican, I don't know, right? I'm just guessing. But still, the effect is, what are we seeing on the mugshot sites when it comes to marijuana? Now, what we're gonna look at is the mugshots for people who are busted for less than 25 grams, less than an ounce of weed. And we'll do it like this, right? So we've got this barrier here. So there's how many black people are in that county. There's how many Hispanics in that county. There's how many whites in that county. What we're gonna do is we're gonna stack up mugshots to match the population. So there's 10 white people. 10 white people busted for weed. And then there's 10 Hispanic people busted for weed. And then there's 10 black people busted for weed. And we'll just keep stacking them like this, right? So we can compare how they're getting busted compared to the demographics, right? But there's a problem. I don't have 10 more white people. I only have one more. 11 white people busted in a 2-month span. Now, there could have been more busted. Maybe they didn't get their mugshot. Maybe their lawyer took their mugshot off the website. Again, this isn't scientific. But again, this wouldn't matter to an employer now, would it? The employer would just see the mugshot on the website, and that's what would matter. And I got another problem. I don't have 10 more Hispanics. I only have 5 more Hispanics busted in a 2-month period for less than an ounce of weed in Milwaukee. But black folks, let's just slide that over a bit. We got 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 110, 120, 130, 138. Wow. That's 2 months worth of mugshots in Milwaukee County, Wisconsin for less than an ounce of weed. Doesn't take any science to see that. You're absolutely right. So that...
Well, there you go. My presentation at the Northwest Cannabis Classic in Tacoma, Washington. That'll be up on the SoundCloud page as well. My apologies that you got the echo effect. It was kind of a big open armory, and the PA was way the hell up in the rafters. No way I could get a direct line or anything. So we do the best we can. We'll have more highlights from the Northwest Cannabis Classic coming up on the rest of this week's episodes of the Russ Belville Show. Plus, some great interviews coming up. Coming up tomorrow, Tuesday, we've got Government at Work with Mike Minardi. He'll be joining us. We'll have our Hemp Day Hump Day with Doug Fine on Wednesday and an in-studio guest, Teresa Daniello, who's flown in from Ohio. I wonder what we'll talk about. Probably medical, actually, to be honest. And then on Thursday, Madeline Martinez from the world-famous Cannabis Cafe. For everyone here at Roll J Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.